better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back, a College World Series title. Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
You know when you anticipate a decision being made or a statement to be released that actually has some substance, that has something you can get excited, worried, or just some information that you're wanting and craving? We didn't get that yesterday. We didn't get that from Greg Sankey. We didn't get that from Hunter Yurecek. We didn't get anything out of the SEC meeting. That doesn't mean that important discussions weren't had. That doesn't mean that they didn't make decisions behind closed doors. But as far as the public knows, it's Jack. It's Jack Squat. You didn't get anything out of yesterday. And that's the politically correct stuff. They're trying to keep stuff in-house, which I understand. But as far as we're concerned, and we'll continue to touch on what Greg Sankey had to say on Paul Feinbaum later today, as well as Hunter Yurecek's statement, you didn't get much. You didn't get, if anything, when it comes to that. And listen, I understand that. You're trying to keep this in-house. You're not trying to get leaks or anything. But as sports talk guys, we want as much info as possible. And we did not get that out of the meeting that took place yesterday with Greg Sankey and the SEC athletic directors. So Hunter Yurecek released this statement yesterday. He said, "Today's meeting was another productive step as we work to collaboratively to face the many challenges related to this pandemic. The purposeful way in which the SEC has approached these complex issues has enabled us to review the most updated data as we focus on the health, safety, and well-being of our student-athletes, coaches, staff members, and fans. As a self-sustaining athletics program at the University of Arkansas, we have the obligation to explore ways to mitigate the financial impact of those decisions, including our ability to continue to fully support the academic and athletic and personal development of our 465 student athletes. Now more than ever, I am appreciative of the leadership of Commissioner Greg Sankey and UA Chancellor Joseph Steinmetz," aka the convoluted way of saying, "We're not going to tell you anything that took place yesterday."
I didn't see, and I didn't go searching for many AD responses or statements from the other 13 ADs, but I bet when they left that room, they all made a decision to give you something along those same lines, which was a nothing burger. I would imagine they made a statement or made a decision as a group that, we're going to give them nothing. Because in the end, they made no decisions. They basically made a decision that we're going to decide the time frame is the end of the month, 1st of August is the right season right now to decide the future of what we're doing here. They're weighing their options. I would imagine it was about coming up with multiple plans of attack and how they move forward. They're not in the late fourth quarter. Maybe they're in the early fourth quarter of having to decide what they're going to do. This is such a weighty decision because they understand the ramifications of not having a football season. And I just can't imagine they're not going to push this till the very end of regulation. There is no need to make this call now because, as we were talking about with Brett Norsworthy yesterday, the financial ramifications, not just for the programs, but for the businesses on the town square, the hotels in the town, everything that feeds into and supports college communities, including the campus life, will greatly change if a football season doesn't happen. This decision that will be made going forward about the football season and what it will look like has more impact than just whether or not there's games.
And he mentioned, I think there was 50-something businesses on the Oxford Square, and he said that only 8 or 9 or 10 would make it if they didn't have a football season. And you think about Dixon Street, how many businesses, not just restaurants, but other businesses as well, occupy that street that makes so much money during college football, particularly home games for the Arkansas Razorbacks. They're going to be hurt. It's going to have a dramatic effect across the country when it comes to the different businesses. Again, it's not just restaurants. It's not just hotels. It's so many businesses that rely on college football to bring massive amounts of revenue to said business, which is why it's so important that we have some sort of college football this season. I've been on record. Tommy's been on record. Even if you don't get the full college football experience that you're used to, full fans, every game and stuff, you still need a morsel. You still need a crumb. You still need something. And I say a crumb. If you could get in 8 conference games, that's more than a crumb. But you need as much as possible in order for these businesses to survive. Because we can't forget, Tommy, a lot of these businesses had to close down based on the coronavirus. So they're already hurting at this point. If you add no college football on top of that, that's only just going to make it even more difficult. And I've never been a business owner, but that's just common sense, man. When you add a tumultuous time on top of another tumultuous time where you're expecting this buco and boatload of cash to come in, it's just stating the obvious at this point that some businesses aren't going to make it if there's not college football this season.
One of the things I want to have a conversation with the governor about is the economic challenges in our state. Let's not forget, a year ago, I believe this month, we were dealing with a historic flood in our state that affected not just one sector or one area of our state, but from this region of the country, but from Fort Smith all the way through Little Rock and through the Delta, there was a huge economic and property loss impact that had, not the impact of the, and there was some loss of life, but loss of property in our state that had some economic downturn. And there were some months of recovery. Businesses were getting over that because businesses lost customers during that time because business customers couldn't get to that business. Mm-hmm. Then you had to overcome that.
What led up to that? Tornado.
It seems like we've been dealt a series of events that have led up to this. You wonder, what the hell's next? One thing after another, how many more events can you take before, there's a collapse? How many more times can a business go through downturns before enough's enough? The state isn't the federal government. You just can't keep printing money. The state doesn't print money,
When it comes to the business, there's just so many different obstacles that you're referring to that business owners have had to deal with these last couple years, months, days. It seems like it's ongoing. And the prospect of not having a college football season, when business owners looked at that idea, it just pains them to see that. Especially, it's not just in Fayetteville, it's other places as well. When the Hogs are good at football, things just go better for business owners across the state. And as a business owner, you would even take the Arkansas Razorbacks not being good just to have a college football season, because that's what you need right now.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
He does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Going to the phones, Cade is in Piggott, talking quarterbacks. Cade, you're on the Morning Rush.
How y'all doing this morning?
Man, we can't complain. How are you doing on Tuesday?
Oh, I'm all right. On my way to work. I just happened to work for Black Hills Energy Gas Company.
All right.
But there's a lot of up there in Northwest Arkansas. A lot of us over here in Northeast Arkansas, we're just as big a Razorback fan as anybody across the state. A lot of us are kind of quiet, but we're diehard fans just like everybody else. Like I was saying, the quarterback situation, Felipe Franks, he's awesome, in my book. Hey, everybody's controversial about him, but I'm going to tell you about a guy that I think is really going to shine. If he ever gets a chance, I think K.J. Jefferson is going to be the man. We got John Stephen Jones and K.J. and Lee Cornsby. I think K.J. is going to shine if he ever gets the opportunity this year. If Felipe Franks does make a mistake, maybe you know, because KJ did show some signs of that he can be good last year, but I just feel like he was kind of overlooked. And I feel like Chad Morse may have cheated him, not being able to develop like him, you know, like he should have.
Kate, appreciate the call this morning. Yeah, and by the way, if you want to get our show on in Northeast Arkansas, you should call every radio station out there and say, hey, we want the Morning Rush on here. But as far as KJ Jefferson goes, Cade, for everyone else listening, we saw glimpses last year. We saw the drive against Mississippi, I think it was Mississippi State, where he punched it in on the opening drive. We saw little flashes against LSU. And like many other freshmen in college football, you see little parts, little future projections, like, man, this guy could be really, really good, but the whole package isn't developed yet. And KJ knows that. Chad Morris knew that. Joe Craddock knows that. Kendall Briles knows that. Now it's just a matter of, hey, this guy looks like he has the tools. He's physical, 6'3", 6'4". I remember when he came up for his recruiting trip, he did not look like a high school kid. He looked like he was already in college based on the way that he worked his tail off in that weight room. So now you're just hoping, hey, can you get the mechanics down? Can you get the offense going under Kendall Briles, which he hasn't been really able to do with no spring practice? It looks like the Felipe Franks is going to get that starting position, which will be a good for KJ, considering that he's used his redshirt year, because he only played, what, three or four games last year? So
it was his redshirt year. So he still has four more seasons.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, he used his redshirt, so he's got that. So he still has 4 years at the University of Arkansas to show you, Cade, and so many others what he can do. There's potential there. It's just a matter of, oh, also, now Malik Hornsby is behind me. You know, if you haven't heard, guys, Malik Hornsby shot up in the recruiting rankings. Like, I'm talking, this guy reached top 100 on 24/7. Many people were looking, especially recruiting analysts. We had Barton Simmons on. We had, and I'm forgetting what's his face. Wola, I can't think of his last name, but I'm picturing his face. But one of their other top recruiting guys, and they both talked. They're very, very interested to see what Malik Hornsby can do at Arkansas, especially with that relationship with Kendall Briles. So he's going to have a battle on his hands moving forward, and that's just with him. We'll see what Lucas Coley does when he ends up getting to campus. We'll see if Landon Rogers recommits and ends up at Arkansas. It's going to be a battle moving forward, but like you, Cade, I'm excited to see what KJ Jefferson can do at Arkansas as the quarterback, to see if he can be the guy. So, no, I think Cade's done. Okay. So, but what about you, Tommy? Where are you at as far as KJ is?
I think it's interesting to see what development can happen with KJ, because I don't trust anything I saw as far as development the last year or so. I don't think we've seen anything. That the unknown to me is Malik Hornsby. Recruiting rankings are one thing. We haven't seen him on the field. That's the X factor. I want to see what this guy can do. I don't think ultimately both of those guys stay 3 years in your program. I think because the transfer portals become so dominant in the game, I just don't think both of those guys are around in the 2024 year, I guess, because everybody wants to play and play now. So it sounds like they're both very talented, and I would love to see them here, because you'd have two great options, but it seems like that's very hard to hang on to in today's college game.
And we were just talking about Kyle Allen and Kyler Murray, just the dynamic with those two guys on campus. You had other guys prior to that at Texas A&M. That's one of the reasons that Kevin Sumlin wasn't able to retain his job in College Station. It's because, yes, he had a lot of talent up there in Aggieland, but he wasn't able to mold it and keep it together. There was a lot of, as Tommy mentioned, the idea of you getting to campus like 20, 30 years ago and being a starter as a freshman was pretty obsolete at a certain point. Now, there was the occasional just freshman phenom that came in and was all world, but it was very rare. Now kids expect to come in today and not pay their dues, not pull pads off practice fields, not be the quote-unquote rookie or freshman that has to go through hazing, to say. Now they expect to come in, be the guy immediately. Some guys can come in and be the guy. We've seen that with certain. It's very rare. Trevor Lawrence is the example often used when it comes to quarterbacks coming in pure polished. But even then, he had a waiting period, y'all. He had to go through some of those rough patches. Kelly Bryant really helped him along the way. If not for Kelly Bryant, Clemson loses that Texas A&M game at College Station, and they probably don't get to a national championship game. So even Trevor Lawrence, which is the quintessential example when it comes to this idea of true freshmen coming in, he still needed a waiting period of him coming in. So good question, Cade, and appreciate your call this morning. Let's get into Brett's comments talking about Greg Sankey. Brett did not hold back when this comments when he's talking about, and it's you very rarely hear criticism of the SEC commissioner, of an athletic director, of someone in power, but Brett went all in yesterday, and here's what he started with on not having like the meeting and it just kind of taking too long and just kind of the prospect of having to do that on just everything that it was way too long when it comes to this meeting going on.
We should have been having this dire meeting, this emergency meeting, and you know it's, they're not really being sincere when they say it was long planned, because as Ty said when we started, we had long planned to be in Atlanta today. So you know the meeting wasn't long planned. It may have been a week and a half, 2 weeks, 3 weeks planned, but they just pulled the plug on SEC Media Days about 4 to 6 weeks ago. But we should have been meeting in April and in May, and maybe even trying to start the season earlier, not much earlier, but instead of that week zero of August 29th.
Fair or foul?
I don't know if it's... I'd say more foul than fair. I think the athletic directors have been meeting more or less daily via Zoom. So I think communication has been going on daily with the commissioner and amongst the ADs across the league. So there have been plans. I don't think there's been anyone sitting on their hands. Was the league taken aback or caught off guard by the Big Ten's decision? Perhaps. I think that's the part where you maybe could be critical, is the fact that the Big Ten makes a decision that's not in, and you can't control what Larry Scott and the Big Ten did, but it had a great impact and effect on what you're going to be able to do. And I think that's maybe where the criticism can come in. But the fact that you might criticize that the league maybe looks unprepared, or that you weren't planning or weren't meeting, I don't think is fair, because all we've heard about is the coaches meet once a week. The ADs have been meeting on a daily basis via Zoom. I don't think that this meeting had been long planned for Birmingham that day, because it is accurate. We were all going to be in Atlanta. The commissioner was set to give his state of the union, if you will, yesterday afternoon. If things went off as planned, maybe the meeting would have happened in Atlanta with the ADs, but that wasn't the original plan.
You mentioned Larry Scott. Brett didn't hold back from what he thought about Larry Scott and some of what else was going on either.
I think it's the biggest meeting the SEC has ever had, the one going today, since the league was founded in Knoxville in 1932. It is of epic, dire proportions. Without college football, it is the apocalypse, not just for college football, but for college sports and for universities. There are people out there that may say, well, that's way out of whack that a university's future could hang in the balance. Sorry, it is, and it's going to be. But the first thing they're going to try to do today, I think, is listen to medical, as we all have tried to during all of this. Since Rudy Gobert night, March 11th on, we have tried to listen to the medical officials. And I wish people set the record straight. You know, last week, the Ivy League got out in front of Greg Sankey. Greg Sankey got bamboozled last week by the Ivy League, a new commissioner of the Big Ten that nobody even knows his name, and Larry Scott, the biggest clown in all of college sports, commissioner level. And Greg Sankey got bamboozled by him.
He did not hold back from Larry Scott.
Kevin Warren's the Big Ten commissioner. Mm-hmm. Larry Scott's the Big 12 commissioner. So,
Pac-12.
What did I say?
Big 12. Bowlesby's the Big 12 commissioner. Yeah.
Larry Scott in the Pac-12. Kevin Warren in the Big Ten. Yeah. Let me get this straight here.
And so he went, all in, and the reason they make fun of Larry Scott is because of the Pac-12's not incompetence with the college football playoff, but they hadn't been the same, the conference, certain the financial decisions that he's made. But like Tommy just talked about, if you've seen the reports, the SEC was kind of shocked and blindsided by the Big Ten's decision for conference-only games that was originally reported by Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic and then confirmed then put out a statement by the Big Ten. But again, Greg Sankey doesn't, and while they try to have ongoing communication, their main job is to within the constituents of their conference, which is the ADs, the SEC, and all that. So there's a little bit of catch 22. Yes, you should know what's going on across the country with the other Power Five, but at the same time, your first priority should be to your own colleges in your conference.
And let's be honest, Kevin Warren in the Big Ten or Larry Scott in the Pac-12 don't have unilateral decision-making power on decisions like this. You think Greg Sankey does in the SEC, that he can just on his own decide the future of the schedule? He may speak for the league, but who's going to ultimately make a decision whether you're going to play only conference games or whether you're going to play at all this year? Greg Sankey may be the one to announce it. He may be the one whose name is on the press release. But Greg Sankey's not making that decision by himself. So the idea that Kevin Warren in the Big Ten was the one that made the decision that the Big Ten is only going to play conference games is a false idea in itself.
Is that a chancellor or governor decision? Which one's above the
rim? I would think it would be much like what I believe will happen in the SEC, and the vote will ultimately be presidents and chancellors will have to be the one to pass it, because you know, at the end of the day, that's where the buck stops with these universities, is with the presidents and the chancellors. You know, other than you going up to their board of trustees. But so, you know, the idea that the commissioner of the Big Ten made this decision, well, that's just not right either.
It's just kind of like the quarterback on the football team. You get the credit when good things happen, but you also get the blame when bad things happen. So of the directive, either response that's good or bad when it comes to the SEC's decision making, is going to be directed towards who? Greg Sankey. But you think about like the SEC. Remember prior to this past season how the SEC decided to make an SEC officiating account? What was the sole purpose of that?
Just to redirect the criticism from fans.
Exactly. It wasn't, and they said to provide transparency and stuff, but that's just a load of crap. All it was is to pull out all those volatile comments directed at Greg Sankey and put them into the SEC Twitter account. That's all it was used for.
Now, here's where Brett Norsworthy is correct in what he said yesterday. The SEC, and it is Greg Sankey's job to see these things coming. Here's what he is paid millions of dollars by the member schools to be ahead of. Here's why he is commissioner, and he is a smart guy, is to be a step ahead of the next move, is to forecast and say, hey, what if, and to be thinking out the scenarios, what if the Big Ten or the Pac-12 made this move? How would it impact our league? And to think through the scenarios of how it would play out. Maybe that had happened, and maybe these conversations were ongoing. We don't have all that information, but it seemed a little bit like the SEC was caught off guard, at least by the response, or maybe the lack of response in the response to the announcement by those two leagues. So
I think 100% they were.
Yeah, I
think it'd be really hard to find evidence that they weren't, because based on the reporting, based on the sourcing you heard from either 24/7, rivals, other institutions, no one saw this coming. But you should have.
I mean, that's the job of the commissioners, to see it coming. To say, well, what if these things happen? What if they don't play non-conference games? What if they don't play at all? How many games do we have on our schedules with these various leagues, the ACC, the Big Ten, the Pac-12? How many non-conference games? How does it affect our TV schedules? How many of those teams visit our home stadiums? How many of our teams travel to their stadiums? How many neutral site games? You know, those are things that should be on a spreadsheet somewhere in the league office, right? And I would imagine this is a learning lesson, not just for the SEC, but for other leagues. You don't have to be the one to make the mistake to learn from it. So just because there's, you know, a crack here doesn't mean that the Big 12 can't learn from this, or other leagues or other sports can't learn from this as well. Listen, everybody's going through this, and at the end of the day, there's still plenty of time to figure out what we're going to do here moving forward.
Sports Illustrated's Ross Dellinger, formerly of The Advocate down there in Baton Rouge, also went on Paul Feinbaum yesterday. And when you heard Brett Norsworthy saying this was yesterday was the biggest meeting the SEC has ever had since its inception in 1932, that statement was basically echoed by Dellinger when he said these next two or three weeks are the biggest in college football history. And you might say, oh, that's just trying to grab a headline. That's just trying to do this. That's just trying to do that. again, correct me if I'm wrong, Tommy, but this type of occurrence has never happened in our lifetime. There's been no debate of whether you're having college football or not since, what, World War One and Two? Is that where you have to go back to? Because I know that, like, Bear Bryant got called. He was, like, headed to Arkansas, and then he gets a call, go to World War II. Like, to me, again, and I don't have as much historical knowledge on this, being 25 years old, but to me, you haven't had a dilemma like this facing the conferences across the country when it comes to playing college football, what amount of college football, when you're playing or whatever. So when Dellinger says that, when Northwestern says that, when you have other different college football writers, analysts, radio people, and TV say that, I don't think it's blowing it out of proportion based on where you are right now.
Yeah. It's a different deal, though. I mean, the business aspect, the money, the breadth of what it means if we don't play, the number of businesses, the number of jobs, the dollars lost, the financial impact beyond just the health considerations of COVID-19, the other side of what the world will look like without college football in many of these towns and all of these college markets will be so vastly different. The town square in Fayetteville, Starkville, Oxford, Knoxville, keep going down the list of all of these college towns, will be so different because, as Brett said yesterday, a vast majority of these businesses, these storefronts, will go under. The hotels will, the Hampton Inn won't be there because the tourism will dry up because their business model is dependent on college sports. The jobs on the campus are dependent on the football season. So the business model in all of these towns center around the 7 or 8 games that are on that campus every year. And there's just no way around that. And that's the weight of the decision. That's why these next 2 or 3 weeks, as Ross Dellinger said, as Brett was talking about, that this meeting having so much weight is so accurate, because it's not just about a season that we'll look back on at some point and wonder, why wasn't there a season in 2020? And you look back on it 50 years from now and you got to figure it out in the history books. There's a lot more to it than that, because I'm of the belief the economic impact for years to come will have dire consequences.
Fayetteville has been voted by multiple different outlets as the best city to live in the SEC. Some would say one of the best college towns in the country, but it's not just for college kids. The people that live up in Northwest Arkansas seem to really enjoy it, especially in Fayetteville. I'm thinking about when I drive through these smaller towns in the United States, going on trips, going on vacation or whatever, and their downtown looks like a wasteland in a sense. And at one point in time, it was vibrant. It was popping. That's where everyone had their business. It was a completely different type of outlook than it is now. And it's not the case for every single city I go through, but some of these cities I do pass through, you see closed down businesses, you see run down shops and stuff. And it's just a bummer to see that. You can't imagine that being Dixon Street or the square up in Fayetteville. But y'all, that's legitimately, I'm blowing this out of proportion. It's one of my dad's favorite phrases growing up. That's not blowing it out of proportion based on the revenue these businesses make during college football season when teams travel to Fayetteville, when fans travel from all over the state, outside the state. You don't know the impact and the gravity that college football has on these businesses. So, and again, this has been less common, and thank God, but when I hear people say, especially people within the business realm, and I'm just shaking my head, I'm just like, what are you talking about, that we don't really need sports? I'm not giving you permission to slap them upside the head, but you should give them facts and figures, say, oh, no. We most certainly do need sports in order for this economy, is particularly in the South where we reside, to survive.
The only thing I can, to draw on now, because there's no other comparison, but remember how businesses were popping and how busy Dixon Street was, the hotels in 2010 and 2011 when the football team was nationally competitive?
It was unbelievable.
You couldn't get a hotel reservation. I mean, you had to make a hotel reservation in the summer to get a room at some point for a home game that season. Hotel or restaurant reservations after a ball game that kicked off at 2:30 was impossible. You probably had to drive to Bentonville or somewhere in Benton County to get a restaurant reservation following a game. And then compare that to last year, where it was easy to get a hotel reservation or a restaurant reservation following a Razorback football game. The stark difference is, compare and contrast those two. Now, cut that in half again, and that's what we're talking about here. And then multiply that by about 130 times across this country in different towns and landscapes. That's the weight of this decision. And then filter that down to towns like Conway with FCS programs and Jonesboro with smaller FBS programs. The tentacles that reach across this are massive.
It's never ending.
Hi, this is Governor Asa Hutchinson of the great state of Arkansas. Woo pig and go hogs.
This is Governor Asa Hutchinson, and you're listening to The Morning Rush.
Welcome back into The Morning Rush. Going to the phone lines, welcoming in Governor Asa Hutchinson. First time Morning Rush appearance. Governor, I know you're strapped for time pretty much at all hours of the day, so we really appreciate you making some time for us here on The Morning Rush.
Oh, glad to be with you. Always look forward to having a conversation about what's happening as well as sports.
You know, Governor, a lot of people may or may not know. I think if they live in Northwest Arkansas, and particularly Benton County, they have a good idea that this is a governor that likes his sports and likes watching his grandkids play sports, because if you've been to a Bentonville basketball game in the last few years, they're likely to have seen the governor at a sporting event. Tell our listeners, because you're a governor that gets out and watches some games because you got grandkids that play in sports.
Oh, absolutely. I love our high school sports, always have, but it's pretty special when you've got some grandkids that play. Of course, Asa the Fourth is played at Bentonville. He got to play with Malik Monk there for a few years, and now Asa is playing at Drury University. He's a junior, and he's got a full-ride scholarship, so basketball's treated him well and still enjoying the sport. And then his younger brother, Abel, is going to be playing at Bentonville. He'll be a junior this year and playing a good ball out there. So I want sports to be back. I'm motivated to make sure we can have that, but we got to do it safely next year.
You know, everybody's watching these updates every day and looking at the numbers. What are the key indicators that you look at? You go through the numbers every day, and everybody's trying to figure out what is the key data component to watch as we try to figure out whether or not we can have football back this fall. What are the numbers we need to be watching as we move forward and trying to make decisions on what we can do and can't do this fall?
I think there's two important parts of it. First of all, we probably put too much attention just on the number of cases, because obviously the cumulative number of cases is going to go up, every day. And the measure of the cases sometimes reflects how much you're testing out there. And so that we put a lot of attention to, and we're going to continue to, but I pay more attention to our hospitalizations. And from day one, we've talked about making sure that we flatten the curve, we spread this out so that we don't overwhelm our hospital system and that they have the capacity to handle their regular caseload as well as their COVID patients. And so that's the key indicator to me. And as I indicated yesterday, I talked to a lot of hospital administrators, and we're in a good position now, even though it gets tight, just because you're going to have a lot of non-COVID patients that are using hospital space. The other thing in relation to sports is, what's the level of community spread? I mean, if you've got fewer than 20 cases in the county, then, you know, the risks are very minimal, and you feel very comfortable with starting school, playing sports. But if you have a higher level of community spread, then the risk increase, obviously. And even though the children are not as susceptible, they don't have the same risk as somebody who's 65 or older, they still can add to the spread of the virus if you're not careful. So I'm looking at both of those indications, our hospital capacity, as well as the extent of community spread as we make decisions.
We're speaking with Governor Asa Hutchinson here on the Morning Rush. Governor, obviously, as a sports talk radio show, we connect how this impacts sports on a daily basis. Just from your perspective and your talkings with Hunter Yurchek or other athletic directors in the state, do you think people truly realize how much sports affects the economy, not only in Arkansas, but in the South and other areas of the United States?
No, I don't think people dwell upon that. I think they know theoretically that sports is a real economic driver. But, for example, the sports activities at the University of Arkansas actually contribute to and help support our academic side. And so it's really a big revenue generator for the university system. But it's also just part of our culture. I mean, you think about hotels. If you don't have Razorback games, if you don't have local sports, I mean, the teams aren't coming in, they're not using hotel space. So it is an economic driver, really, at every level, whether it's high school or whether it's the summer tournaments that we've been missing. We've, here in Little Rock, you had the big basketball tournament here.
Real Deal on the Rock.
Mm-hmm. Real Deal on the Rock. We weren't able to have that. That was a big economic driver here in Central Arkansas. But you can multiply that around the state. So it is, not only do we miss it, but, that is a factor in our economy. And whenever you're looking at a state like Arkansas that enjoys our sports, but also we like to host those, it makes a difference to us.
Governor, what is the data or the medical experts that you're listening to and leaning on? What does it say about people under the age of 25 and that age group? How are they reacting? What's the data showing you that how is COVID reacting with that age group?
Well, they're reacting as a typical young person, that they believe they're invincible, they're not worried about the virus that much. Now, some of them have been taught well and they're trained and they have an understanding that even though it's not going to be a high risk for them, they still can spread that to their loved ones. And so there's a growing understanding in that age group as to their own responsibility and the risk associated with them just running around. But that's been one of the problems. I mean, whether you talk about over the 4th of July or Memorial Weekend, when you're looking at that age group under 25 out there at the lake or in a house party somewhere, that they're clearly not socially distancing, they're not wearing a mask, and they're just having a great time. Well, in this environment, that is irresponsible behavior, because that's what leads to the spread of that virus. And even though it might not impact them, it just might pass through them. They could give that to their grandmother. They could give it to somebody else in their community that is impacted by it. And so, education is a critical part of that. And we see in that 25 and under, the increase in their cases is growing faster than actually the 65 and plus, because the 65 and older are being very, very careful. They know how risky it is for them.
How severe are the cases? I guess I didn't ask. How severe are the cases in those ages 25 and under? I guess what I was trying to drive at or trying to determine as you look at the data as we're trying to get back to football and college football and high school football is determining the risk and the severity of the cases. Is that even a factor as you're looking at it and as the decision makers are looking at it is those in that age group, How are they doing in that age group when they are contracting COVID?
Well, the repercussions, it's a very mild reaction to the virus at that age group. And so some of them might have the virus and are asymptomatic, which means they don't even show any symptoms. Others might have, a headache for a while. They might have a temperature for a while, but it just passes through them and they go about their business. But even though they are asymptomatic, they can still pass along that virus to others. So, and that is a factor as you look at the risk, and it is a low risk for young people whenever they go back to school or they play sports. It's a low risk to them, but you also have to factor in there is some risk, and then secondly, how that impacts the larger community. And obviously, it could be coaches that they're around. It could be the officials that are there, or it could be the teachers if you're in a school environment. And so it's kids are the highest priority, of course, but in a school environment, you also have to worry about all the people that they're around. And so that's why these are big decisions that we're making. But let me just say something back on sports. We've got to be innovative. I mean, right now we're allowing, baseball, the non-contact sports that can go ahead and they're playing right now. But it's the contact sports that are a greater challenge for us. And I did talk to Hunter Yurecek, and, you know, the broader SEC, they're trying to figure this out, but they're not subject to the usual rules of the state health department. And so higher education is exempt from it, and they're going to make their decision in terms of the health of their student athletes and those that are impacted by it. But I'm hoping that they can be innovative, figure out the right time frame that they can engage in it.
We're speaking with Governor Asa Hutchinson here on the Morning Rush. And Tommy and you guys were talking about 25 years and younger. Asa, I'm 25 years old. I kind of reside in that bonehead millennial category. And it's hard sometimes for, I think, when you have an older, whether it's Tom, like sometimes I tune out what Tommy says. Sometimes I tune out with an old, and I'm just being honest. I'm just being frank. So how do you resonate with some of these younger kids? How do you resonate with teenagers? How do you resonate with college kids? Are you talking with, I don't know if like younger popular Arkansas kids, but like how do you get through to these millennials that aren't abiding by the just the different things, whether it's from the CDC or whatever, that have shown that it could increase if you don't follow these procedures and rules?
We're trying to utilize their role models or people in our advertising that set a good example for them. And so we're using contemporary figures, we're using sports figures, and bringing them into the mix and helping on the communication. I realize that you don't sit back and watch my 1:30 briefing every day, and neither do most of the 25 and under.
I did last. I did yesterday, though. I will say I did yesterday, so got to give me a little credit there.
All right, I do, and I'm just joking about that. but you have to do. You have to reach them through what they're listening to, and we're looking at online messages. We're looking at sports figures and coaches as they communicate that message, and I do think they do listen. Yeah. And I talk about my grandsons, and they understand the risk. They've been educated on it, so we just got to continue to help them understand it. You know, and one of them is, you know, do you have the kids wear masks at school? I mean, what's the reaction to that? And children are resilient. They understand these things. Now, it's hard to get them in the habit of doing that, but, you know, they learn, and I think that they can be successful in that. I don't think it will have adverse consequences to them.
Governor, what has to happen for specifically high school sports and specifically high school football to return this fall?
Well, I mean, first of all, you got to have school. I mean, they're not going to have high school sports without school starting. And then the question is, you know, if you start the sports and say it's football, you got two issues. One is the health of the players on the field, and we have to be able to have sufficient testing capacity that is a quick turnaround so that we know the players that are going out on the field are COVID-free. That would be an ideal scenario. That takes a lot of testing. And then secondly, you worry about those in the stands. And so they do have to comply with our state rules for venues that make sure there's social distancing, the wearing of masks. I think that's the easier part of it. particularly in high school sports, but it's the players on the field that are the greatest concern because, you know, and I don't know how parents and the public react whenever you have a football player that tests positive. Mm-hmm. What will people feel comfortable then pulling that one student out, isolating them, and going on about the game? You know, but that's going to be the reality of what happens next year, is that we're going to have positive tests, and we have to deal with it just like we do in the work setting, in our family setting. Life doesn't stop. You deal with it and continue on. Now, the bigger measurement is how big is the spread in the whole community, so that you can make good decisions. So it's not just one student athlete, but you could wind up having multiple, and that's obviously when you can't go on with the activity.
You've had your critics over the reasoning of you're not giving a statewide mask order. You've explained in your daily briefings at times why you have not done that. I want to give you the opportunity to do that again this morning as to why you haven't given a statewide order for people to wear masks.
Well, first of all, we're all trying to get to the same objective, which is we want people to wear masks. We want them, when they can't socially distance, to have a mask on. But, you know, right now I'm having a challenge just enforcing our mask rules within restaurants and bars and those type of venues, which is a requirement. I get complaints every day. Well, so-and-so went into a restaurant and nobody was wearing a mask, or the staff didn't have a mask. Well, we have to enforce that, and we have to get compliance, and we're trying to do that. Can you imagine what it would be like as to trying to enforce it in the general public? And what winds up, like in Texas, they have a mandate, but you give a warning the first time. And so it's really an education process that you're going through. And so our what we've approached it with here in Arkansas is we've given a model city ordinance so that we'd have the same type of requirements and mandates that a city can adopt. And I think Fort Smith is one of those that's debating that, but we've had six cities adopt that. And that way, if a city says, you know, we've got a challenge with community spread, or we really want to make a difference here so we can have sports and activities, so we're going to clamp down and we're going to have a mandate for wearing the mask, then the cities have that option, and many of them are taking that. Now, that doesn't have a criminal penalty with it. It doesn't have a fine with it, but it does allow law enforcement to go into a business and to say, you're not wearing a mask, you've got to be removed from these premises. And so it does give some enforcement capability with law enforcement, but it all boils down, wherever you are, that if somebody doesn't want to wear a mask, it's going to be hard. You're not going to wind up arresting them. You're going to wind up educating them to do the right thing. Now, we have the capacity to do that. That's what we want to do, and I think it's starting to increase in Arkansas, and I hope the city activities and city ordinances will help on that.
Governor Hutchinson, we just spoke to the idea of some millennials not listening just because of, like, tuning out and stuff. When you're talking on the subject of masks, and I thought you laid it out perfectly, how do you convince the people of Arkansas that it's not a political stunt, or it's not picking one side or the other, one part or the other? How do you convince Arkansans that it's just something we should all do together, regardless of which party you side with?
Yeah, I think that comes down to our personal experiences. You know, whenever somebody develops COVID and winds up going to the hospital that you know, all of a sudden you realize, hey, this is not about politics. This could happen to anybody, and it's getting pretty close to us. And there's a growing number of people in Arkansas that have been impacted either personally or in a family or in a friend way about somebody going to the hospital because of COVID. Yesterday we had former Senator David Pryor, mm-hmm. former mm-hmm. governor, former senator. He went to the hospital testing positive for COVID. And And so it's just a reminder that it could happen to anybody. And I think that's probably the best education experience. But it's also just listening to the science, and I hope people do that and not to the politics of it.
Are you hearing anything from Washington or higher up from the White House, wherever, about the timing of a vaccine? Or what have you heard as a governor about possible timeline on that?
Well, we're actually fortunate that we all know Dr. Nate Smith, who's our Secretary of Health, who is with me at the 1:30 briefing every day. He's going to be leaving. He's been recruited because he's a national star to the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, so he'll continue to be a friend and somebody engaged in this fight. But we have someone coming on as the interim Secretary of Health. It'll be Dr. Jose Romero. Dr. Romero, right here in Arkansas, is on the national committee that's reviewing vaccines and their development for the United States. And so we do have a lot of engagement in that, and we're really optimistic. It's moving quicker than we thought because of the huge national resources and commercial resources being put forward in that effort. And so, you know, the word is today that we're developing very quickly better therapeutics, which means better treatment protocols for somebody who does have COVID, so it gives them a better chance of recovery. And then secondly, the vaccine, they're very optimistic about. So it is possible by the end of the year that we could have a vaccine.
Governor, you've been a U.S. attorney. You've served in Congress. You've worked in the DEA. You've been in Homeland Security. You're the governor of Arkansas now. Have these last 4 months been the biggest challenge of your public service career?
They have. And I've been in Homeland Security post 9/11. So that was a very, very tough environment. I've been in some tense situations as a federal prosecutor. And the challenge for this is, and it's not just me, but it's for everyone, is that the end is uncertain. The future is difficult to know exactly where this is going to wind up. And that's challenging for us when we've been in it for 4 or 5 months and you don't know when we're going to be able to pull out of this. And particularly, I mean, it's challenging for me, but I also think about our medical doctors and our nurses that are dealing with this every day in the hospital. Those are the ones that are really, really on the front line, and that's who I think about and hope that we can bring an end to this because it's so so difficult on them. But this has been challenging for me. Of course, I just get out there and try to make the best judgments I can every day, listening to the medical professionals. And someone said, you have to make a lot of unpopular decisions. And my response was, every decision I make seems to be unpopular. So it is a little bit challenging. We'll get through it.
Governor, how many hours of sleep have you been getting the last couple weeks, last couple months? Been like four?
Well, you know, it's been a little bit on the short side. But I try to pace myself because it's a long haul. So I still get my exercise. We talked about basketball. I still play basketball. So even before COVID-19, I was out there playing full court basketball every Friday with a group of guys, and I love it. And so I miss that part of it too, but I'm ready to get back.
Governor Asa Hutchinson, kind enough to make some time for us here on the Morning Rush. Governor, we really appreciate it.
Great. Great to be with you. Y'all have a good day.
The battle of wits has begun. It ends when you decide and we both drink.
Come on, you gotta be kidding me.
That's a tough choice.
How can you know all that?
There's just so many options.
Would You Rather Tuesday, presented by RAD.
All right, it's brought to you by RAD, Rise Above Alcohol and Drugs and the Partnership for Success. Find them on Facebook. Just search for Partnership for Success Region 2. You can call for more information at 870-391-3176. Region 2 consists of Baxter, Boone, Marion, Newton, and Searcy counties. They want to work with high school and area youth to help them rise above alcohol and drugs and the Partnership for Success. Again, find them on Facebook at Region 2 PFS. That's RAD. Rise above alcohol and drugs.
Jenkins delivers on these every single time. So without further ado, Matt, go ahead, man.
Would you rather try to tackle Joe Adams on a punt return or defend Marcus Monk on a one-on-one post pattern?
Either way, you get made to look silly.
Yeah.
Which way do you want to look sillier?
I think the punt return, because you're not singled out. If you're on one-on-one coverage, whatever cornerback you are, you're going to get put on a poster. You're going to get that highlight is going to be you and Marcus alone for years and years to come. On a punt return, no one remembers the certain cornerback that got juked out against Tennessee because right. It was a team concept. So I'm going the team concept of getting juked out by Joe Adams on a punt or kick return.
Yeah, I'm with you. There's 11 guys all trying to do one thing on a normal line of scrimmage play in one-on-one. You're exactly right. In a special teams play, you got 11 guys pursuing one guy. So, yeah, I'm with you. You don't get singled out as much that way. So I'm going with you on that one.
Would you rather participate? I can't verify. I feel like I've asked this before, maybe in a different way. But would you rather participate in a Nolan Richardson practice or an Eric Musselman practice?
I think I would rather participate in an Eric Musselman practice because he has talked about he doesn't do as much full court and it's more 3-on-3. Nolan was old school, man. They'd go 5-on-5, full court, and then run bleachers or something. You know, he was brutal. And so I think that's, to me, it's an easy call. Give me a must practice.
You always talk about getting your cardio in. I'm also, you know what, the Nolan Richardson practice would be more intense, but I would like to, it's more iconic. I would like to say I survived a Nolan Richardson mm-hmm. practice more than, not to say Eric Musselman isn't intense, but if we're going intensity level, I think most people that agree that whether you're a former player, current player, whatever, that Nolan had a little edge there. So I would just take that just to say, hey, I went through a Nolan practice.
Yeah, you'd have that. That'd be a badge of honor.
Would you rather be Mike Tyson's sparring partner?
Nope.
Or challenge Joey Chestnut to a hot dog eating contest?
You're going to lose either way.
Yeah, I'll take the hot dog contest. Yeah. Those, Nathan's hot dogs
Yeah, the other way, I get hot dogs at least. Yeah.
So. I'm taking that. Me and Tommy agree there.
Yeah, I won't get a concussion eating hot dogs.
That's fair.
Would you rather go back?
I'm not dipping them in water. That's gross.
That's disgusting when they do that.
Wet bread?
Mm.
Bread and water? No, I'm out.
Would you rather go back in time and watch the Miracle on Ice match or the game when Hank Aaron broke Babe Ruth's home run record?
Miracle on Ice. Baseball just... hockey doesn't necessarily do it for me, but that's one of the most iconic moments, not only in U.S. sports history, but sports history in general. So I'm taking that.
Both events, I've seen that the golden highlight in both of those events, but both events I've not seen from start to finish. I think I'm with you. I'd like to see the Miracle on Ice, though, start to finish.
Which sports record would you rather break? Will Chamberlain's 100-point game?
No, that's not his record that we'd like to break.
Or Cal Ripken's consecutive game streak?
Cal Ripken's consecutive game streak will never be broken. So if you break that, you're going to have a record that theoretically no one will ever break again. What you're asking is to do the impossible.
Well, neither of these probably will ever be broken again. Maybe the point scoring.
If it's a toss up, I'm going basketball. So I'm going Wilt's record of over 100 points.
Give me a baseball record there. I'll go Cal Ripken.
Who would you rather lose the music history of, George Strait or James Taylor?
Oh,
that was more directed towards you because
you can
ask that again.
Which artist would? Who would you rather lose the music history of? So they basically cease to exist. George Strait or James Taylor?
That's like choosing between children. I can't answer that question.
Huh?
I don't really care. So that's yours.
I don't have an answer for that.
All right. Well, you just lost them both.
I can't lose them both. I don't want to lose either one.
Well, they're gone. That's like
half my music on my phone.
Oh man!
You have music on your phone?
Got lots of music on my phone.
I'm impressed.
I bet you his music on his phone's better than the music on your phone.
I bet my music's a lot better than Ty's.
Probably agree with that too.
Would you rather make a living being a mascot or a PA announcer?
Oh, PA announcer. Yeah, that's easy.
I had to be the mascot for Brewster's Ice Cream when I worked in Little Rock. I dressed up as an ice cream cone, so I'll take the. Had to wear the.
You
ice
dressed
packs.
Up as an ice cream cone?
Yeah, so I'll take.
Is there pictures of this?
There's probably one.
What kind of ice cream cone?
I think it was just vanilla with the cherry on top.
A vanilla ice cream cone?
So, I a lot of ice cream.
I would love to see ice cream. Or I'd love to see a picture of this. You as an ice cream cone.
It's kind of like the Barry Odom.
So you were a cone head.
I guess I was a cone head. So. Yeah. It's like the Barry Odom Bosworth pictures. Yeah. Only he has them. I have those.
I got the reference you made. Did you catch that? It's a Saturday Night Live reference.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch Saturday Night Live?
I mean, I've watched clips of like Spade and Farley and stuff, but
it is still on.
Conehead, was that late 90s when that was?
Probably.
I can't remember. Would you rather wear only 1980s clothes or wear only 1980s hairstyles?
Well, clothes. On occasion, and Ty still wears 80s clothes.
That is true.
I love, love retro looking stuff. I'll take the clothes every day of the week.
Probably 80s clothes.
I guess I have a mullet sometimes. So I guess it was mullet an 80s or 90s thing. In early 2000s.
When was Billy Ray Cyrus most popular?
Ooh, good. Well, you bring up the mullet. Do you see where Matt Zimmerman's letting his hair grow out?
Yeah. He's going full hippie.
I had someone send me a picture of him. My buddy Tyler sent me a picture. He's like, this is going to be you in 20 or so years. Yeah. Me and Z, like, low-key, I can see the resemblance a little bit, but I told him he should grow out the mullet.
Yeah.
So I've actually convinced one of my friends to grow out his mullet. Yeah. So. Do it.
Would you rather spend the rest of your life on a sailboat as your home or an RV as your home?
I wouldn't want to be seasick.
If no seasickness was involved, sailboat's the easy answer for me.
Really?
Port to port, beach to beach, that'd be great.
Take me to breed an RV. Ransom says take your pick of the lot, and I'll go across the country and do all sorts of things in that sucker. So.
But you could go around the world in a sailboat.
That's true. I just don't have as much a desire to go overseas as I do. I mean, there's so much to do in the United States. I'm 25 years old, and I feel like I've gone a decent amount of places, but I have so much more I need to explore. I need to explore everything in the United States.
I want to see Italy.
I want to go to London.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
London's my destination I want to go to. Go to a bunch of different places over there. Maybe see a Premier League game.
Little cousin went to Japan a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So that was just an incredible trip down there. Would you rather live without music or without television?
I could probably go without music easier than television.
Yeah, I'm agreeing. Both would be difficult, but if I had to pick one, like you said, it'd be music.
All right, this one could be tricky. Would you rather sit on a very cold toilet seat or a slightly warm toilet seat?
Oh, cold. I can't. The warm toilet seat is very unnerving. You wondered what just happened
it's
here.
It's not welcoming.
It's not welcoming when you sit down and the seat is slightly warm and you don't know how or why it got that way. No, much rather sit on a slightly cool toilet seat.
Adam in Springdale texts in. He says, would you rather beat Texas or Texas A&M in football right now?
A&M. We've beaten Texas semi-recently down in Houston.
2014. Yeah, listen. Sam Ehlinger is one of the cockiest, most undeserving quarterbacks in college football.
Wow.
When he uttered the statement, we're back after beating Georgia in the Sugar Bowl 2 years prior, and then they had the season they just did, it was music to my soul. That being said, the way, the manner, the fashion that you've lost to those stupid Aggies from Texas A&M, that cult of a university down there in College Station, it's Texas A&M for me. Listeners, listen, I know you hate Texas, and I know that resonates with you. And listen, I got an upside down horns in my room right now with my grandpa next to it. But I hate Texas A&M University more than any other school in the entire United States. So I'm going A&M for sure.
Last two real quick. Tommy, would you rather beat Ty in a chicken wing eating contest or beat me in a KCBS barbecue cook-off?
I don't think I could beat Ty in a wing eating contest. I'd rather beat you in barbecue because I think I would actually have a chance in that. And I think I could hold my own in a barbecue cooking contest.
And Ty, would you rather sit through a no-holds-barred Comedy Central roast of Ty Richardson hosted by Ruskin and Zach or Clay Henry and Tommy Kraft?
Well, I hear that on a daily basis on Ruskin and Zach. So I would actually find the content highly entertaining if you guys could actually come up with your own stuff, you and Clay. If you guys want to do that one day, I will be all for it. We'll do it. We'll close it out one segment. Ruskin and Zach, I feel, can come more improv and stuff. I would be actually very curious to see if you and Clay could come up with some good content to just roast me on.
To roast you?
Yeah, we'll do it.
No holds barred.
Clay's off vacation. next week. Want to do it next week? We can do it next week. We need content.
Careful what you ask for.
All right. Well, it's coming.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer. 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.